Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. This is our second podcast of the week because we really care. And next to me, the guy that cares the most, Phil Logan. How are you?
Hello, JB. Unusual introduction for
me. What's wrong with that?
I mean, I do care. It depends what you're talking about, but yeah, I care.
Yeah, sure. And down the line, somewhere, probably in a shipping container. Hello, Tim.
Good evening, gents.
Good evening.
I am indeed in the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container.
Again.
Sorry I can't be with you again, but glad to be back for to pick up and mop up all the areas we missed in talking about European rugby and all the other stuff going on.
Yes, quite. Well, before we get into any of that, please remember to follow us on social media because, well, we like to keep in touch with you. We're at Rugby Podcast, or you can find me and Tim. It's not a joint Twitter. It's not, you know, like those weird couples. Oh, actually, you're a weird couple, Tim. You've got a joint email.
No, we don't.
Oh, do you not? Oh, okay.
No. With one of our email accounts, the Apple one, which I don't really use anymore, we have separate email addresses, but it sort of filters into one central thing.
Wow.
But anyway. This is
top podding. Yeah, so I'm at Jay Beardmore. He's at Cocker. We've also got YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all sorts of other things. So yeah, go onto our social media channels and of course leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because, well, why not? Right, more Heineken Cup chat. More hot Heineken Cup chat, please.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got a few tweets that maybe could start something off. But you sounded like you had something, Phil, there.
Nope.
No, okay.
Sorry.
I thought I'd interrupted you and you're about to say something. All right, well, we've had some tweets to at Rugby Podcast. And so we can use some of these as a springboard. But Connor Quinlan tweeted us.
Okay.
Says, Freddie Burns, I bet his dirty pint on Saturday would have been rancid. What's the worst dirty pint concept you boys have heard on or partaken
Ooh.
In?
Ooh. Well, funny you should mention that because it's not one which I have partaken in. I've had plenty of horrific dirty pints. And if I was, when I have grandchildren and I sit them down and I give them some worldly advice, it'll be, do your dirty pint as quick as you possibly can.
Don't think about what's in it.
Yeah.
Go and take a tactical afterwards.
Sometimes, yes, that is definitely good advice.
So the worst one I've heard of is actually a friend of mine who went to Liverpool University and it was some quiz night. It wasn't even a rugby event, it was a quiz night. And I think it was only half a pint. And it was in, I think it's called the Excalibur. It's some little pub in Liverpool where students go. I can't remember the exact contents, but all you need to know is that the majority of the pint was cooking oil.
Oh, my God.
I used to know a lad who, his party trick was to drink a glass, maybe not a pint, a glass of cooking oil.
That makes me feel so ill.
Oh, it's horrible.
So, just on the so South Africans, because, you know, sometimes they do things differently to the rest of the world. Or maybe we do things differently to the rest of the world. Who am I to judge? But when we went to South Africa to watch the Lions tour, me and the little crew from Broughton Park, I was in the room, or the hunting lodge, which had the beer fridge in. And late at night, when the boys came stumbling in, one of the lads opened the fridge, expecting apple juice, and started necking olive oil. It was horrendous.
The worst one I can think of wasn't even a dirty pint. It was a mate of ours, who necked a full pint of red aftershock.
Oh, God.
What?
God.
That's stomach pump territory. Yeah,
that's... By the way, whatever happened to the stomach pump? Because I, when I was in school, that was a frequent thing.
Yeah.
Oh, the boys got too drunk and they had their stomach pumped. I've not heard of anyone having their stomach pumped in like 20 years.
I think the medical advice is against it now.
What a bizarre thing to do.
So on the Dirty Pint, I know you've played it, Jay. I'm not sure if you've ever played it, Tim. The Royal Rumble is a game that I love.
Wow.
Oh, talk to me. What's the Royal Rumble?
So normally stag do kind of game. So somewhere between 10 and 20 participants. And sometimes you set a limit, a price limit. But the basic concept is everyone has to, on their own, go to the bar and buy a drink. And the contents of the drink can be whatever you want. And you then put them all the drinks on one table and you draw lots.
Oh, wow.
And first person out of the hat gets their choice of any drink on the table.
What a great game.
That's brilliant.
They can't pick their own, but they have to neck it. And you go through 1 through to 20 or however many people. And so the state of the drinks that are left when you're down to like the last 5 is just remarkable. It's such a good game.
That is outstanding.
There will be people listening that will do that on a club social.
It is great fun.
Well, it's very similar to we used to call it Chorlton Breakout because we live around here. But everyone puts in a tenner, and you have to drink all of the money's worth, which doesn't sound like much, in the local Wetherspoons before you're allowed out into town. It's surprisingly hard in an hour.
In Wetherspoons, yeah. It is. Yeah. If you're just at a regular pub, it would be 1.5 pints each.
Manchester House or something. Here. Yeah. Sorry, does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm interested in, because we've had a few people asking about this, Ben Baker being one of them. Ben Baker didn't ask that one. Who was it? There's lots of people who were talking about the fact the Challenge Cup isn't having any games broadcast.
Oh, it's annoying, isn't it?
I can see the merit of it, but I'm just quite interested because you guys have no skin in the game. So what do you think?
Well, I don't have any skin in the game because my beloved Ulster are in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, and my beloved Treviso, of course, are playing in the Challenge Cup. And they had a tremendous...
I kind of meant skin in the game as in I've kind of gainfully employed by the broadcaster. But...
Oh, right, okay.
but yes, you're right.
Well, I'd love to watch Treviso trouse Grenoble this week because I think they're going to be a serious force in this competition. They nearly qualified from the group stage of the Heineken Cup last year. So, I would love
on
to...
On the broader point, I'm just quite curious what you, as fans, what you thought of the way that it's been done over the weekend.
I don't understand it.
So 10 games, but no Challenge Cup.
So the two things that I was disappointed in, and JB and I actually mentioned this off-air before the podcast, was... So no Thursday night game, because often on Challenge Cup you get a Thursday night game, which if you're sitting at home doing nothing better, it's normally quite good and entertaining.
Yeah.
But also we're disappointed that a lot of the games were doubled up. So there was no late night game on the Saturday, no 7:30 kickoff, and only 2 games broadcast, or 4 games, but broadcast in 2 time slots on the Sunday. So we didn't...
But that late game on the Sunday was the worst.
For working... I'm sure it's very bad.
Did you like it as a...
Yeah.
I didn't even like it. I just felt... I was imagining how the fans would be. Awful for fans to go to the game.
Yeah. The game.
I was thinking of it from TV audience sort of thing.
Yeah.
So me and my brothers...
Two very different things.
Always used to like watching the late game Premiership football. You have your Sunday lunch and then you go and watch the late game. And, you know, more recently... in fact, that's how me and Tim sort of started becoming friends. We used to go around on Sunday night and watch NFL.
We did.
Yeah, so like I quite like the late game. And I've got to say, I was disappointed that I didn't have 3 games of rugby to watch today. But add to the 4 games I should have watched yesterday.
It is important for the paying fans. Because I remember me and you, Tim, a few years ago went to watch Ulster play Leicester in Leicester. And we got season ticket holder seats because it wasn't a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, and it was something like 5:30 or maybe even 7:30 on a Saturday, they couldn't go or didn't want to go, seats back in the ballot.
I get the league games, right? The league games should be, broadly speaking, played at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, broadly speaking. Although I think it's important we have a Friday night game and a Sunday game. But, okay, I get that. if your team qualifies for the Champions Cup of Rugby, the Heineken Cup, with the best games pretty much that rugby has to offer, so what? You know, you have to go late on a Sunday because it's a huge event and you should go late on a Sunday and you should be grateful that you're going.
But the distances that people travel, I just...
I guess. If you're a Munster fan, do you really want to go to Welford Road? Yes, you do, actually. Everyone wants to go to Welford Road at the moment.
And Munster fans do travel phenomenally well.
Yeah, but that's a good example, isn't it? How do you get from Leicester back to wherever they're going on a fair point. That is a fair point.
It does really mean if you're playing that late Sunday night game, you've got to take the Monday off.
Yeah.
But my opinion is that... So the Challenge Cup games will get shown from the quarterfinal onwards. There'll be live games. But I think as a product to spread around the world and to grow the game, and also to, you know, we've got Channel 4 have a game every week as well.
Yeah.
I think the focus on the Champions Cup, I understand it's harsh for fans of those teams in the Challenge Cup, but I think it's a great product as a package to put out on NBC or to spread around the world. Because as you say, the quality of the Champions Cup is immense.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what if the Challenge Cup isn't on TV, I don't know what the point of it is, frankly. It's got to be on TV somehow.
I also would prefer it on TV, but that doesn't mean I'd watch every game.
Yeah. Are they sold as one now, or are they Challenge? And I mean, I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Well, basically, I think the message to clubs that are in the Challenge Cup is be better.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Absolutely. Right, we touched on, so in yesterday's podcast, we touched on most of the games. There's probably three that we didn't touch on at all.
Well, I mean, on Tim's theme of being better, we should really talk about Leicester.
Well, that game is certainly two teams who could be a lot better than they currently are. Ulster hosting Leicester. It was 3-0 at halftime, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ugh. It's not a particularly attractive or exciting game. Neither team playing particularly good rugby, although Ulster did probably deserve it in the second half. They probably strung together a few cohesive moments at a couple of points in the second half to win the game.
I thought Ulster were pretty good second half, to be honest.
They were better.
The conditions were better. The rain was biblical in the last quarter. It was horrendous.
Do you love Will Addison yet?
I've always...
No, but do you really love him, though?
Admired and respected Will Addison. He was one of the best players.
Yeah.
And as he has been most of the games that I've seen
him
play,
actually. He's a cracking player.
He's a very good player.
What about that lad? Like on Michael Lowry. Lowry. Yeah.
Wouldn't you have thought that Ulster have had enough of bad boys? Anyway.
Obviously, you're referring to the I had enough of watch the film with Will Smith.
Exactly.
Martin Lawrence loads, so they've had enough of it. But he is tiny. Like, he's 20 years of age and a small lad. And play, you know, the last line of defence with guys like Manu Tuilagi running at you.
Yeah.
But he did all right.
He did. I'm always incredibly impressed and just think how brave these young lads coming into this level of rugby
are. That's such a good point. Because I remember, like, my first experience of senior rugby, and I mustn't have been much... younger than him, and it was terrifying because everyone's massive.
Everyone's
and
enormous,
and he's much smaller than me, playing with lads who are much bigger than the guys I was playing with.
Yeah, so, he the first few minutes, first 5 minutes, where George Ford puts a bomb up and it's moving around in the wind, and he gets nowhere near it. You thought, oh god, he's gonna have a long day. But Leicester, the Tigers didn't target him after that.
But wasn't that wonderful poetic justice when? They put bombs upon him maybe three times.
Yeah,
one of them which he knocked on. Everyone's, you know, going, oh, is this the right thing for them to do? Look at Leicester's scrum, and then the guy kicking the bombs high tackles him, and then goes off for a yellow.
Yeah,
there's something nice about that.
Justice, it felt to me like Leicester needed the angry George Ford on Saturday evening. There didn't seem to be anyone from Leicester grabbing that by the scruff of the neck.
No.
I mean, they needed someone to give it that go forward, and it, Manu did it a little bit late on, but they didn't seem to be able to get him or Callum Afoni or Guy Thompson or Mike Williams, like those kind of go-to runners. They didn't. None of them seemed to really come into the game, no. or not until it was too late. Anyway,
I don't know what to say about Leicester other than this isn't really acceptable. You see improvements in them, and occasionally you do, and then they regress to this. And Ulster are not good. That's the other thing.
It's weird. It's interesting you say regress because I was watching it, and my assessment of Leicester is they didn't really do anything that bad. They didn't really do anything wrong, and no one played terribly. But it's just I don't know.
Biblical rain, bit of wind. Get it? It's hard. But
No, that's not what I'm saying. But they played all right. But there was no one. I said they needed the angry George Ford, and I think it's a mentality more as much as anything.
Yes, yeah, probably.
It's not skills, and it's not a lack of talent, I don't think.
No, it's definitely not those two things, which is why I think it's even more unacceptable.
Yeah.
Well, than we originally thought. When you've got... Have I mentioned that I quite like Kyle Eastmond? And then you've got George Ford, Manu Tuilagi. You bring on Matsumua from your bench, you should be scoring points. Having 3-0 at half-time is just not good enough, is it?
Yeah, and it's something that I complained about prior to Matt O'Connor leaving, and something that the first couple of games that Jordan Murphy was in charge of, I thought we'd turn the corner on. But they're not bringing those guys that you've just mentioned, they're not bringing them and some of their big forwards, their experienced forwards, into the game in positions where they can do things.
Yeah.
And maybe George Ford is to blame, maybe the coaching setup, maybe the systems, but whatever it is, I don't know. But they're not making the most of the talent, the undoubted talent that they've got in that team.
But I just don't see leadership on the field. That's what I'm really concerning. And it's probably quite tough on Tom Youngs at the minute because he's struggling a bit, really. And I'm not so sure whether Tatafu Palotta now will be starting on Friday night.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me.
I just wonder if there's too much responsibility put on the shoulders of both the Youngs boys because they're, well, Tom's no longer an England international, I guess, but Ben is. You know, they're the heartbeat of the club. And I'm not sure if they're the guys to do it.
I don't know what the answer is. But so far, other than the first couple of games, the new coach bounce that we got from Jordan Murphy, they seem to be, like you said before, Jay, regressed to where they were 6 months ago.
It's odd because, I'm going to say I disagree with the word regress because I don't think, again, just to say, they're not... I didn't look at them and go they're poor, they're doing things wrong, or there's I can't work out where they need to improve.
But
because
did they make the most of the undoubted talents that they've got? Did they bring all of those attacking talents into the game as much as they should have done?
No, not even.
And
close.
I'm exactly with you, Tim, that I don't know what the answer is, and I don't think they played particularly badly, but they just didn't. They certainly didn't play well enough to beat what is a weakened Ulster side.
Mm. Yeah,
not even the scrum was that impressive, really.
No, the scrum was all right. The lineout was a mess.
Lineout, oh my really god, there was a mess.
I can't remember. So I've watched so much rugby this week that I can't remember which lineout it was. But I just remember looking at this lineout and thinking, I'm sure it's Tigers. Is that a joke? Nobody jumped for the ball, and the ball just went sailing, kind of like just above how high you could reach. Like, it just went sailing over. I was like, well, not only was the throw terrible,
no one
jumped for it.
No
one. No
there.
One jumped for it. All right, okay, brilliant. This is the standards that we're playing to now. Unreal.
In that group, Ulster now top the group, astonishingly. Which is the kind of thing that we often do, is win a few games early on and flatter to deceive and then just implode.
Well, who else in that group?
Well, the other two teams was Scarlets hosting Racing 92.
Ooh.
In a 13-14 win for Racing 92, thanks to a 77th-minute penalty try.
Oh, no.
From a
and also
driving more.
Thanks to a very, very assured Finn Russell performance.
It wasn't
the flashy Finn that you quite often see. It was a really solid 10 performance from Finn Russell. He was excellent.
So I've not seen the game, but I saw some comments on Twitter. Has Simon Zeebo been carb loading? Has he been putting on some bulk to help him perform in the top 14?
He's been doing. Has he been doing the Exeter Chiefs bikini body workout?
That's what I've been hearing.
Is it on the Parisian diet?
Is he?
The baguette, fromage, pâté, foie gras.
Good for
it's
him.
It's a good diet.
Only the very finest wines.
Well, do you know the owner of Racing 92 has a wine cellar?
Yeah.
And he regularly invites the players. In fact, doesn't Racing's training ground have a wine cellar?
It's outrageous if it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's actually a breach of French employment law if you don't have a wine cellar.
Is
Zeebo not in great shape?
Apparently not.
Is that what people say?
Apparently not. I didn't see it, so I'm going to. I'm literally just telling tales out of Twitter. So, but apparently not in his lightning fast best.
I don't know.
That's a big blow for Scarlets. That.
Yeah, losing at home.
Huge.
But they'll still fancy themselves because being in a pool with Ulster and Leicester is an advantage.
Well, they should smash both of those teams, and away.
They should do, yes.
And so should Racing. Yes. I feel like Racing play Leicester all the time. It's 3 years running that they've had each other, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
They haven't played in the futuristic dystopian stadium yet.
My favourite stadium.
Love that stadium.
I'd love to visit it. Oh, talking of visiting places, shall we tell everyone where we're going?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, we're going to have some special on-location podcasts coming your way soon.
Well, we might do a podcast in your presence, but it's not a live podcast, so don't think it is.
Certainly on-location podcasts.
On-location podcasts,
outside
correct.
Broadcasts.
That is what I meant. Yeah. Outside broadcasts, quite.
Yeah, definitely not a live podcast. You can sleep easy for now, Jay.
Thank God.
So we've just booked, we've been threatening it for a while, but we've just booked our tickets to go and watch the World Cup repêchage. The final weekend of the World Cup repêchage on the, I think it's 23rd of November in Marseille. So it's two games. It's the four teams are Canada, Germany, Hong Kong and Kenya. And they'll be playing the final round of matches. Friday the 23rd in Marseille.
What's the first game?
To give, and the winner will be the final World Cup place at next year's World Cup.
Absolutely. So a lot on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's on the Friday. On the Sunday, we are going to the World Rugby Player of the Year.
Hang on.
Annual award ceremony.
That is correct, yes.
And that's in Monaco. Two to three-hour drive along the south coast of France.
No, nice. So we're just going to drive there, are we?
So we looked at train and we looked at driving. But we actually found the cheapest option was for us to fly from Marseille to Nice via a little stop off in Rome.
Sadly, there's no rugby in Rome that weekend.
Apart from Italy playing the All Blacks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is that as well. There is that. So we'll go and watch Italy playing the All Blacks.
So we've got six flights. So it's 3 days, six flights, three games of rugby and an award ceremony at the end of November.
Excellent.
Marseille, Rome, Nice, Monaco.
Three nights. Don't know when we're going to sleep, but we will sleep. So here's a question. Will the previous two games that we see in the miniature tournament, right? All the points combined scored in those two games, will they be greater or lesser than the All Blacks winning margin against Italy?
Interesting. And I suppose another pertinent point would be any recommendations for, what is it, elevated bars? You do like,
yes.
You like having drinks at altitude.
Absolutely. Drinking at street level makes me ill. Yeah, if anyone knows any, I've been to Rome a couple of times now, I hate it with a passion. So if you know anywhere which isn't like a museum or isn't full of tourists where we can give you a few beers, please let us know. Because I'm desperate for a few beers when we get out there.
And indeed, if you're going to be in Marseille or in Rome, let us know as well.
Yeah, there
we'll
go.
We'll happily have a beer and talk you through the games, or you can talk us through the games.
The authentic native bars, not the rat trap.
Not the tourist trap.
Correct.
Yeah.
So given we were just talking about Finn Russell, A game that we've not really touched on, other than the result and the bit of trolling from Marrow, or we didn't touch on in yesterday's pod, was the performance of Adam Hastings.
Did he play well?
The prince that was promised.
Yeah, so he's been tearing up trees this season in the Pro 14. The only game I think I've seen him play was one game for Bath. I think it was against Wasps when they lost at home.
Was it a night game?
About 2 years ago. No. I'm sure he was playing fly half for Bath against Wasps about 2 years ago.
It was Bath.
And he had an absolute shocker.
Yeah, I've got a feeling it was a night game.
He's only a young man, and generally he was pretty good. He had some great attacking runs himself, showing and going and drawing defenders or moving defenders around the park. But overall, the game was interesting because Saracen scored that first try and they cantered him for that first try. And you thought, uh-oh, here we go.
Mm.
And then they threw everything in the kitchen sink. They really speeded up the tempo. They were moving the ball around. They were taking quick throw-ins, quick taps. And Glasgow held everything that they threw at them and more, because Glasgow in the second half started to turn the tide. And it was only some amazing last-ditch defence from Saracens that prevented Glasgow from scoring on a number of occasions. And Glasgow finished much the stronger team than Saracens. Saracens were almost worn out, as you mentioned in yesterday's pod, kind of the demoralising effect of beating your head or banging against the drum and getting no success. That happened to Saracens, and it was testament to the Glasgow defence. And Hastings was good value for all of that, but they come out of it with nothing. They come out of it on a 13-3 loss at home.
Now, and on that, we talked about this a few weeks ago, odd decisions in terms of going for the corner, going for posts.
Yeah.
And at 13-3 down with 10 minutes left, a very kickable kick, they went for the corner and then shat the bed.
Yeah.
And I don't get it, because they would have come away with a bonus point, which is at least something. I don't understand what they're thinking and how these errors are made at this level.
Yeah, that was a big mistake.
I guess at that point, though, they want to win it, don't they?
Yeah, but
they've still got to score twice anyway. Twice.
So take the points when they're available.
No, because they'd have drawn.
Yeah, if they score a try, but...
Yeah, I think you need two tries to win it, and you've got to be in the mood to win it, and you've got to win your home games. A draw wouldn't have been good enough, I don't think. I mean, it's better than a loss, isn't it?
It's 2 points that they don't have.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And it's 2 points less that one of their competitors wouldn't have as well.
Yeah.
The points differential, they would only, if they'd got the losing bonus point, they're only three behind Saracens, not four behind Saracens. And this could, well, just put a little pin in this, because this could matter.
Mm, yeah. I know I'm boring and I say the same things all the time, but Adam Hastings, it just proves, you know, as soon as there's an opportunity, look what happens. I'm sure they'd...
Well, he had an opportunity at Bath and did not take it.
Well, did he have an opportunity? Not a consistent starting opportunity.
Well,
George Ford, Reece Priestland, you know, that isn't as easy as when there's literally nobody else and you have to play every week. And actually, he's quite good.
And he did get told, he basically went there and he's been told, you're our man, we back you, go for it. Which is quite liberating for a young guy with talent. But if you're if you're putting so much emphasis on, oh my God, I've got a chance, there's a couple of injuries at Bath, I've got to make it count. Pressure.
And do you know what? Exactly the same thing for Mike Lowry.
Yeah.
Mac Lowry.
Oh, I'm going to get a Michael Lowry, so we don't have to do that. But we're going to get a lot of mileage out of his name.
We are.
I feel for Glasgow. I really like them as an organisation. I think they play good rugby, but God, Saracens are good, aren't they? So what are you going to do?
I love it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I love how we touched on this yesterday, like you're saying, with Marrow, but Owen Farrell, people would have been hating him as well. They're probably the easiest side to not like, and yet I love them for that, for being so...
Saracens.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to kind of accept them for who they are if you're going to enjoy what they do. And it is difficult. I like it when they go to old school Saracens. They kick and chase everything and just batter people. That's what I like.
Well, Glasgow out Saracens in many ways this weekend, but still came away from the game with nothing, and Saracens get 4 points.
Yeah. So I think it's strange how, and I'm sure that this happens. I'm sure it's happening to Exeter now. Just because the competition is different, you start considering things in different ways. So I'll give you an example. When I was playing at Broughton Park, there were teams that we just expected to beat. We didn't give them any, you know, we wouldn't give them time of day. We just expected to beat teams like, I'll give you an example, Widnes. Like, we would just beat Widnes. You know, it wasn't really a question. You drop down a few levels, even though you've got what you consider to be an equally good team. All of a sudden, you're, oh my God, you know, Widnes play with width and they've got a big pack. And like, well, this didn't used to be the case. And I bet some of these teams going into Europe who are very competent and confident in their own leagues, like Exeter, all the chat and Glasgow will be, oh, well, you know, you can't get away with that in the Heineken Cup. You can't do this in the Heineken Cup. Rather than just playing the game, like the game that they play.
I'd be surprised knowing Baxter, or knowing what I know about Baxter rather than knowing Baxter, I'd be surprised if that kind of stuff did affect Exeter in terms of the mentality and the way they prepare.
Wouldn't you love to know Baxter as well?
I'd love to go for a few pints with Baxter.
Yeah, but this week they have been saying things which are not very Exeter-like. You know, that they've been putting pressure on themselves to get the win in this competition. They're targeting this game, being the Munster game. So,
but they say that about every game. They target every game.
Well, no, the noises were different. I mean, you know, They were quoted fairly widely in the press. I do think there's a case of that just some teams expect to win in Europe, some teams don't. And if you're not perennially successful in Europe, it's very, very hard to do that.
Yeah, but hold on. I would say that's the same for what you just described. Exeter is what every single top 14 and pro 14 side does. They've just said what those sides do. They all put an extra emphasis on Champions Cup.
They do, but in different ways. I think Saracens will be a lot more relaxed going into the Champions Cup, as will
Leinster. Well, I'm not talking about Saracens. I'm saying Exeter are doing what the Pro 14 and Top 14 sides do.
Yeah, but it's how they feel going into match day. So undoubtedly, you're right about, say, Leinster will go in with more emphasis on that game. But their team, their 15 going into it, will be far more relaxed about the prospect of playing a European game because they're so confident of getting through and winning. Exeter is not so clear. And anyway, same with Glasgow.
The honest answer is I don't know enough. But it would surprise me if Exeter took that attitude. And just because Broughton Park relax against Widnes doesn't mean Exeter relax against Munster.
Can I just point out, I just use Widnes as an example. I don't mean that about Widnes. I just picked them out as an example.
Well, one fallout from the Saracens game could be, and we don't know at this point as we record the exact extent, but Billy Vunipola went off. Which we've already talked about on the last podcast about Nathan Hughes could well miss the entire autumn internationals now. Yeah. And Sam Simmons is injured. So who's your next cab off the rank if you need an England number 8? Or your next couple of cabs off the rank?
Yeah, you're talking two now, really, aren't you? Well, the man, admittedly, I think he's only had one decent performance that I've seen this year because Ackerman's been playing there. But Ben Morgan did have a good game. Mm. He had a very good game. He's by no means past it, and he's got experience in the shirt, although Eddie Jones has, I don't think, ever picked him.
And doesn't Don Armand, shouldn't he be the next cab off the rank?
Could this be the current cabin service driving people around? But he's not, and it's a joke.
He should be the current number six cab, or certainly one of the current number six cabs.
Yeah,
he's played a bit at eight. But
he has, and recently too.
Not that much experience at eight.
No,
not a lot. And they have been playing Matt Kvesic there, who's got much less experience.
This is interesting with Matt Kvesic. Do you think he's allowed to play there because he's a smaller fella, but he's got two giants either side of him, so what's the difference?
Well, so I always say with back rows, it's about the balance overall. Yeah. So Sam Simmons, when you're talking Exeter's first team back row, he's 100 kg. He's not a big boy, but you've got 120 and 125 kg Armand and Ewers either side of him. It simply does not matter. So Kvesic is similar. He's probably a yard quicker off the base, which is something that Simmons can do, although he's nowhere near as good carrying in heavy traffic.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think the balance is the most important thing.
And also, you know, Kvesic's interesting because he also gives him a genuine jackling threat, which you don't get unless they play Curry or Willis, but they can't play him.
Or Underhill.
So the answer. Are we saying from a potential position of England having these incredible resources at number eight, we might actually be saying we could asterisk on that could we don't know what's happening could be going into the autumn internationals with very much not top notch number eight options.
Well, you'd be going in with your first three options unavailable.
It's so over for England. It is so over for them. It is. They are so done.
I mean, the other one who has been in and around the squad has played number eight, although I can't see him being an international number eight just yet, is Zach Mercer.
No, I'm not having it.
Mark Wilson?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean,
he's playing there for Newcastle.
Yeah, he's good.
He is.
He's really good.
But again, I'd sort of put him in the Zach Mercer camp. It's not, well, Zach Mercer is in the not test international yet.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Zach Mercer, didn't he play against France? Or was that Simmons? Simmons played against France, didn't he?
In the Six Nations.
Did they both play against France? Yeah.
Simmons played several games in the Six Nations because he scored a hat-trick against Italy, didn't he?
Exactly.
At least two tries. I'm not sure if Mercer, because Mercer was the asterisked apprentice player alongside Marcus Smith, but neither of them got anywhere near the actual team.
He's an incredibly talented guy, but I think what the Heineken Cup match at the weekend showed is Zach Mercer's got a way to go to be top notch. He's going to be.
Is he? Is he big enough? I don't think he is.
Not yet.
Well, no. I just thought he lost the ball a few times in contact and got turned over quite a bit. So when you suddenly had these massive international units like Jerome Kano, then that step up, I think. But he might end up being England's number eight for the autumn internationals, and maybe he'll prove me wrong. I hope he does, but I'm not sure he's there yet.
I wish him all the best. I think he's an amazing player to watch. In the same way Sam Simmons is, but I just remember Sam Simmons playing against France and getting absolutely melted by a massive Frenchman.
Yeah.
And the sad reality of it is you need to be a big old boy or have lots of big old boys around you.
That's the thing. So Sam Simmons, for me, if he's going to play international, needs to be a six or a seven with someone like Billy and then someone else like a Ewers or Armand alongside him.
How does this tickle your fancy? Underhill, Simmons and Mercer.
Lightweight.
Yeah. Hard. Bloody hard. But lightweight.
Phenomenally lightweight. But look what Cardiff did.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And
Gareth Ainscombe's try, by the way.
Oh,
wow.
Yes.
That result cost me 180 quid.
When the fun stops, stop, JB.
Yeah, yeah. I had to remortgage my house after that.
One general point about European rugby. The European strips has to stop.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you. That said, I love Cardiff's European strip. It actually looks really nice.
What, that kind of powder blue pyjama top?
Love it.
I don't like it.
I'm not a fan of that. I do like Ulster's red, and I did like Saracen's red.
Yeah.
But
was that a special European kit, Saracen's one?
Well, they're normally...
No, they've been wearing that this season.
Have they?
That's their change kit.
Oh, is that their change? Because they normally have blacker than white, don't they?
Yeah, Glasgow had nasty little...
I mean, they've got three. They've got the grey, the black and the red. Yeah, they've worn them all.
I am convinced, right, and I've always been convinced of this, and no one can change my mind, because Well, not many people can. if you just kept your kit consistent, you would sell more of it.
One kit?
Yeah, I might go and buy a Leicester Tigers kit. Because, like, it's just going to be the Leicester Tigers kit for all time. They should only change it once every 5 years.
I agree with that point.
But you might buy, you'll sell more of them if you don't do these awful blooming shirts like Zebre have got and like Exeter. I don't, that sky blue, I'm not having that. And the Bath are blue, black and white hoops.
I love
that's what Bath do.
I love Exeter as a club. I think they do virtually everything correctly. Every single thing.
Virtually. Almost.
Their European kits are absolutely atrocious.
They're an abomination.
They are consistently disgusting.
Yeah, they're dreadful, aren't they? And where can they go with these kits? I mean, we've seen it all. We've done everything. Yeah. I think we've even tried camouflage, or at least they have in like Super Rugby. I'm looking at five kits here, which played against the Lions, and each one of them is made out of little different bits of maps from the provinces they're from. We've done everything, and opposite me in the rugby dungeon is a Harlequins kit, and it's got four squares on it, and it consistently is four squares, and we know what it looks like. That's what they should play in.
Yeah.
That's what they should play in. And maybe they have a change kit, and that's fine. Maybe you change the change kit.
Oh, no,
but the home kit...
Harlequins don't have... They should wear skins rather than wear the change kit they've got this season.
Yeah, I mean, that is a particularly horrific kit. In fact, I've got two Quins tops here, and we know what they look like. In fact, I know the guy who deals with Harlequins for Adidas, and he says it's a real struggle because they can't change the kit. And my answer is, good!
Yeah.
Fantastic! That's great news!
Keep it simple.
Exactly. So if you just keep the kits consistent for, I don't know, 5 years, you would sell so much more of them because you would.
And the irony, what's one of the best kits in forever was the 150th anniversary kit where Harlequins went back to the original kit.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
There's
what a
lesson right there.
Exactly right. They don't mess around with the Lions kit, do they? Or the All Blacks? Mind you, the All Blacks kit is the biggest force on earth.
Well, it's all this technology.
Yeah, yeah. The strongest kit, the blackest kit. The two-tone black kit, which is bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
And a two-tone kit. Ridiculous. Occasionally it has a collar. Heavy, in-depth rugby chat. let's turn our attention, after we talk about Sale Sharks, to next week's games, because Sale had a cracking result out in France.
Big win away at Perpignan.
Yeah.
Perpignan had a man sent off after about 30 minutes.
Leading with the forearm, which was quite interesting. Also worth noting that Northampton got an absolute spanking by
home to Clermont.
Yeah.
It was pretty much a full strength Clermont team as well, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. This is like putting a seasoned international team into the under-20s World Cup. Ospreys battered Pau, Connacht beat Bordeaux. Bristol Bears really gave a bit of a hiding to Zebre. And free-scoring Worcester beat Stade Francais away 27-38.
Hell of a result.
That's a hell of a result.
Good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dragons beat Timisoara Saracens. And, yeah, Treviso spanked Grenoble, which we mentioned.
It's nice that when they want to, the Premiership sides can go fully loaded into the Challenge Cup, knowing, because the way it's structured now, there's a three-week Premiership Cup break during the autumn internationals.
Worcester weren't even fully loaded.
They weren't.
They rested a load of players, and they got so young lad Ollie Lawrence.
Yeah, I've just seen.
Oh yeah,
at 13,
he's a proper talent, isn't he?
Yeah, big strong boy. And Ted Hill, who's scored a few tries already, scored a couple against Leicester. He got some good game time and scored again.
Jeez, 19 years old, 6'5", 17 stone 8. Goodness me.
Who's that? Ollie Lawrence.
Ted Hill.
Oh, Ted Hill. God, is he that big?
Yeah, big old boy. No stats for Ollie Lawrence, sadly.
he's a big boy.
Yeah. Shall we look forward to next week's games?
Let's do it.
Only stick to... and one other result. Unlucky, because Coventry pipped London Scottish by a mere 2 points.
2 points, yeah.
Yeah, I can say I was in... I was in Ravenhill, which, by the way, I love going to that ground. In fact, Irish grounds in general are absolutely bloody brilliant.
I've not been to all of them, but I have been to Ravenhill. I loved it.
Watching a game at the RDS, and it makes me think about watching games in England sometimes. And we always have a great time when you go to Welford Road or
Exeter,
Dandy Park or whatever. But yeah, when the stadium at capacity is something special, and that's how it should be. And football grounds with £20,000 in can feel soulless compared to RDS with 18,000 rammed in, absolutely fanatical fans. It was brilliant. And Ravenhill the same in the rain. The crowd, they're always brilliant. I love it.
Oh, whilst we're on to Irish rugby, and before we get into the matches, just a quick word. Did you watch Shoulder to Shoulder?
I've not seen it yet.
I've not seen it yet.
I've been away this weekend. It's on my to-do list to watch this week.
So I do enjoy history. I love sport. I enjoy politics.
Mm.
And seldom do I enjoy politics through the lens of sport. I mean, I really dislike it, actually. This is bloody brilliant. I'm not just saying that. It's really, really good. It's very fair, very balanced, very well made. Brian O'Driscoll, I mean, he's actually like a professional, professional documentary maker slash presenter. He's absolutely brilliant, and it's just well worth watching. The highlight for me, if you want to go back and watch it, is David Duckham speaking about going over in the troubles.
I've seen the clips of that. I want to see the context around it because it's powerful.
I wasn't aware of the story, but basically everyone refused to travel except for the dreaded English. You know, the hated English, and then the English travelled, and it's an incredible story, and it's a real, real good piece of work. I was sceptical. I was completely wrong. Brilliant.
Would you say it was a fascinating documentary, wonderfully, sympathetically, and courageously told by Brian O'Driscoll, and beautifully produced by Craig Doyle? Hashtag shoulder to shoulder.
Who tweeted that?
Martin Bayfield. Followed by...
Whoa. Martin Bayfield tweeted that.
Yeah.
Hang on. Well, so
there's a giggle in Phil's voice.
Wait. So has anyone else from BT Sport has been tweeting about it, Phil?
Maybe someone else tweeted something rather similar.
Oh, go on.
Maybe Lauren...
It'd be interesting to know what they think about it, being like, you know, working with them and stuff.
Maybe Lawrence Dallaglio tweeted something very, very similar the next day. Or not quite word for, there was a few changes to it, but very similar.
Incredible.
Well, we've all copied and pasted.
Hey, look.
When we're short for time and we want to get a message out there, but we haven't got the time to brain power. I was imagining Lawrence is probably in an airport departure lounge about to get on the plane. Oh, God, I said I was going to tweet out about this because it's brilliant and I want to flag it up.
Do you reckon...
Copy paste. Bayfield's got away with words.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
We've all done it. We've all done it.
If you're going to pick someone to copy from, it's going to be Bayfield. I wonder if there's.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's just a mix of communication. Maybe Lawrence is a bit tired or something, and he sends out a text to Bayfield like, "What would you tweet?" He thinks he said, "What would you tweet?" And he said, "What did you tweet?" Or something like that. Some form of words that get mixed up. So.
Oh, it was good. Well, the main point is it was, and what was great is having live games all day, followed by that. I just thought, brilliant. It was played on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And as JB said, well worth checking out.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
To-do list this week.
Oh,
right, fixtures.
Speaking of this week, come on.
Fixtures, here we go.
Yeah.
So, Friday night, we've got hopefully better performances from these two teams who both lost this weekend. We've got Leicester hosting Scarlets.
Right. This should be, based on this week's performances... In fact, the last 18 months' performances, an absolute bloodbath with Leicester getting hammered. Does anyone disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that.
Tim?
I disagree with the extent of the hammering. I think that Leicester at home will, in a European night... I mean, you remember that game when Ulster came to town and you had your Pienaar shirt on, Phil?
I do.
Leicester European Friday nights in Leicester are special, and I think it will be tighter than that. But yeah, you'd have to make Scarlets favourites. And it's interesting that there were five away wins in the opening weekend.
Well, I'm going for Leicester. So.
Yeah, just saying that, Tim. I do remember last year Leicester conceding 43 unanswered points against Glasgow in the Champions Cup.
Ooh.
So yeah, I don't know what to make of it, but I'm not predicting a Leicester win here.
I'm going with Leicester win.
And I think they will make a fist of it, but yeah, Scarlett's to win.
Manu's looking good. That's one bright thing.
Yeah, and the more they can get him into the game, the better. But you've got to do it at the right time. You can't just use Manu. You've got to use him as a decoy, and then you've got to use him again.
The threat of Manu opens up other doors, and you've got to use those other doors, you're right.
Absolutely.
Cast Exeter?
Yeah. So Saturday, this is 1 o'clock in Pool 2. I think
Exeter have got to go and win now. They have to win. This is the away game they've got to win.
And they won last year against Montpellier away. Mm-hmm. I think they can do it. So give me Exeter.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be something good about Cast, right? I mean, they're top 14 champions. They seem to underperform in Europe.
Yeah.
Well, away, but they're at home.
Exactly.
At home and still in the competition, so they will put up a good fight.
Yeah, give me Exeter.
And then the other pool two at 1 o'clock is Munster hosting Gloucester, which I think will be a 10 to 15 point win for Munster.
Yeah, I'm sort of with that.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Then
Edinburgh-Toulon?
Edinburgh-Toulon, 3:15 in pool five. So Edinburgh, which the one result we didn't touch on, Edinburgh lost 21-15 to Montpellier. They had a disallowed try for crossing that felt like it could have been given the other way. That happened in the last 5 minutes or so. Mm. If they scored that, they would have won. They would have won away at Montpellier.
That's amazing. They're a bloody good team now, Edinburgh. And Toulon are not a good team. You have to accept that. They're not the Toulon of old. Give me Edinburgh.
It'll be a hell of a result. It'll blow that pool wide open. Give me Edinburgh. Why not?
Well, go on then. I'll go Edinburgh.
All Premiership clash. Wasps-Bath. Now, which ones are you working, Tim?
Leicester-Wasps.
Leicester-Wasps?
Leicester on Friday, Wasps on Saturday.
Oh, right, sorry. okay, fine.
So 3:15 in pool one, Wasps v Bath. Now, Wasps, I mean, they both lost in their first games. Question. I think I know the answer.
Tell me what you think about me.
Would you put Freddie Burns in the starting team?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, I would.
I would actually be tempted to say, Freddie, have a week off.
They've got
options. They've got options at 10. They've got options at 15. Just go and forget about everything.
Freddie Burns
for a week.
At 15, it just is the most monumental waste of talent. I mean, Reece Priestland started his career at 15. Of the two of them, Reece Priestland goes to 15. They simply don't need both these boys. One of them has to go. It's not good to rotate your 10. In fact, it's bloody stupid. Pick one, stick with them. I would play Burns personally. And I also think... I've got no idea who's going to win this. Literally no idea.
Give me Wasps at home.
Wasps at home.
Is Jamie Roberts fit to go?
He was concussed. He was knocked out, so it's unlikely.
If Jamie Roberts plays Bath, if not Wasps.
I think Wasps. But I think this is the game. Whoever loses this, they are basically out of Europe.
Yep.
The other game's on Saturday.
Saracens Lille.
Pool 3, 5:30. It's got to be Saracens.
Yeah.
After Lyon lost at home to Cardiff. I
mean, they not only did they get battered at the breakdown, they were completely incapable of doing simple things like mauling the ball, not dropping it. You know, they lacked composure. And going to Saracens is not easy.
And no Fern.
Gents,
no
Fern. I'm gonna have to call you back in a sec.
Okay. All right, bye.
Night.
Cool.
Racing Ulster at the dystopian hell.
I think Ulster have a 2% chance of winning this game.
2% chance, excellent. Do you want to tell me why, or should we just move on to Newcastle?
Ulster aren't very good. Racing are very good.
Excellent.
do you want any more analysis than that?
I'm pretty happy with that. Newcastle Montpellier.
Oh, what a game. If Newcastle can get a result in this game, it's on.
Isn't it?
Imagine if Newcastle
get relegated.
Mount an incredible charge on the last eight of European rugby, coinciding with them getting relegated.
It feels like Newcastle when they played against Toulon. Toulon were just baffled about who these upstarts were. They couldn't quite compute. You know,
well, it wasn't even a full strength. It was like a half-rested Newcastle team.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. It's genuinely astonishing result.
That said, Montpellier are bloody good.
They're bloody good. They are bloody enormous.
Yeah, but it didn't stop Newcastle beating up on Toulon. I mean, the line speed, just the speed over the ground in general throughout the game, was difficult for Toulon to handle. So,
you going for a home win?
No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I don't know. one of these two will come away with a victory unless they draw.
Insight and analysis. There you go.
Toulouse, right, I love this game, Toulouse-Leinster, because Toulouse are big. They're just the old champions of Europe.
Yeah.
The old dynasty, and Leinster are, well, they're not the new boys in town anymore, but they're certainly, you know, the new empire. It'll just be a good spectacle, but I think Leinster are going to batter Toulouse. Toulouse at home, though, there's still something about that.
There is. This is the kind of magical European rugby, like Bath Toulouse.
Yeah,
it is. They're great spectacles of games. I just cannot see Toulouse. I can't see him living with them. Living with Leinster. In fact, can you see based on what we know, based on how dominant Leinster were last season, based on the Irish Grand Slam and how dominant Ireland are compared to the nearest counterparts at the moment, can you see anyone living with Leinster, apart from maybe Saracens at the Allianz or possibly Racing in Paris? But then...
I think the only team that can hold a candle to them this year is going to be Clermont, and they're not even in the same competition.
Yes. Yeah, I just can't see it.
And then Cardiff-Glasgow. I think Cardiff will win this. Simply put, as much as I don't like the team that much, they were bloody good. Like, they were gritty, they defended well, they conceded an early try. Thomas Williams can really play. Gareth Anscombe did pretty well. But that back row...
Gareth Anscombe, that try.
They just keep on coming at you.
Are you going to get BB at the end of your Twitter handle, then?
I don't think so, no.
Not just yet?
No, I lost my virginity some years ago. So I don't feel the need to do that.
If Cardiff win the European Cup, would you do it?
No, never in a million years. So that's it, really.
There we go. So no Tim for the final minutes of our second podcast of the week.
Oh, and I am also doing something interesting this week, I think.
Ooh.
I think I'm working at Sail Sharks, would you believe it?
Working for Sail Sharks?
indeed.
So Sail Sharks are now employing you.
Yeah, something like that. So if you're on the Fan Village and you want to see... An amateur with zero training trying to interview one of their players prior to the game, I'm your man.
Do you know who you're going to be interviewing?
No idea.
Any preference?
Marlon Yard's injured. That'd be good fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about stuff. I'll tell you the guy who I'd like to interview for this game, and he didn't play last game, so he might be carrying a knock, is AJ McGinty.
Of course, he
played for Sale and also for Connacht. So great insight all round.
That would be a good one. They'll want him on the pitch, surely.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're around pre-match, I think it is, I'll be in the Shark Tank on stage or I don't know yet. to be confirmed exactly what I'm doing. But I'll be there.
Are you going to be wearing a Sail Sharks blazer?
It's part of the contract.
From your side.
From my side, yeah. I got my people to submit that request. Right, so that's enough of that inane chat. You can find us on social media at all the aforementioned places. If you don't know where to find us, well, it's easy. Re-download this podcast and listen to the start of it.
Do you think there's any chance that Tim and the shipping container have been picked up and put into a car cubing device?
Ooh.
A crusher, an enormous industrial crusher?
There is a good chance that has happened. I mean, 50-50, yeah. 50-50. All loaded onto the Marco Polo for the sale all the way around to China. Enough of that. So, we'll see you next week. And also watch out for Rugby Dungeon. There will be one this Wednesday. Until then, enjoy all of your rugby, go well, and let the boys play.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.